something a little bit different today. Well, I would say very different because I am on the other side of the world from where I normally am in Melbourne. I am in Barcelona in Catalonia in Spain. I am here at Giloteca, a very cute coffee place, and I'm with the owners, Cameron and Alex. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Hola.
Hola.
So good to be here. Cameron, set the scene for us. Where are we? What are we looking at when we're in here?
It's like a shop that sells products that are artisan products from Spain, which we originally started selling. And it also has a coffee machine inside, and we sell specialty coffee as well. Yeah.
And is the specialty coffee scene in Barcelona a bit of a thing, or are you guys bringing something different to the hood?
No, it's been here for quite a while. It's been here for maybe 10 years, I think, already, or maybe even more. Kind of began with, I think some people from Melbourne had a coffee shop called Federal, and they used coffee from El Magnifico, which is in Barcelona, which is a really old roastery. And that's where it kind of began. It was more brunch and coffee. That was a long time ago, so maybe 13 more years ago, perhaps. Yeah.
And did you pick up a Melbourne accent from them, or are you not from around these parts, Cameron?
No, I grew up on the Mornington Peninsula, so I'm from Mount Martha originally. Yeah. So,
and what finds you in Barcelona?
My partner Alexei is from Cuba. We lived in London before here, and then when London ran its course, we came over to Barcelona. We kind of planned it for a long time.
Okay. And so, Cameron, I've seen you in this shop before, but Alex, I've seen you in a different place. Tell us about, you know, the scope of your business.
Well, we opened a second one. The name is Coto, and it's in the Giloteca is in the neighborhood of Bonn, and Coto is in a Gothic quarter. And it's very similar, just change the name and the color. But yeah, we do almost the same thing. We have like a shop with things that we love from Spain, and then a coffee machine.
And what's it like running a business in Barcelona?
I think it's the same everywhere. Like it's Barcelona is quite easy because it's quite a cosmopolitan city, have people from everywhere. Locals are a little bit more scared, but when they start to notice the people coming in, then they start to try as well. But I think it's quite easy.
And I mean, it must be interesting moving to a town and opening a business at the same time. Like, how did you know Barcelona well before you moved here and opened the coffee shops?
Yeah, I lived here for 4 years when I came from Cuba. And then when we was living in London, my best friend lived here in Barcelona. We came here many times to visit. We quite know the city quite well.
Yeah. And so what attracted you to move here? Like, for people who haven't been here before, what would they fall in love with about Barcelona?
Well, I think it's Barcelona and in general Spain. I think it's a quite easy place to live. Like, you can find everything here. You have a mountain, you have the sea, you have amazing food, architecture. I think it's like every piece of things that you can look for is here in Barcelona.
Do you get much of a chance to experience all of that just in the businesses?
At the moment, no, because we work 7 days a week. And because we was planning only to open Giloteca, but like a year later, we found other place and we opened the second one, Coto. And we give it a bit time, and then we will get some day off later on.
And Cameron, tell us about your history in coffee and cafes.
So I worked in hospitality quite a bit. So when I lived in Melbourne, I originally, when I was younger, worked at the Dava Hotel in Mount Martha, which is still there. Then I've also worked at Chasers nightclub. As a busboy and a bartender for a little while, or a couple of years. After that, I've done lots of different jobs, but I also worked for Blue Train Cafe for a long time, and that's really where I learned how to make coffee. But that was kind of at the beginning of latte art and all of that. So when someone tried to teach me latte art, I was like, oh, this is, I had to pump out coffees like so quickly. And I was like, no, I don't have time to do this. So we used to just spin the coffee a little bit and do a little swirl. That's how we used to do it when we used to make coffee. But then after that, I studied graphic design. So the time I was working at Blue Train, I was studying graphic design. And then I went out and worked for a while. And then when I moved to London, I met Alexei. And he was working in coffee, but he worked in Starbucks. And then I introduced him to some of the coffee shops that were just opening in London at the time, Flat White, Espresso Room, and a couple of the other new kind of scene there. And then we decided that we'd open a coffee shop in London together.
And tell me about that.
We had that for 9 years, I think. And then that was called Birdhouse. It was in Clapham Junction. So we had that, and that was more brunch and coffee. And then we planned to move to over here. So we, during COVID, we were kind of in the process of coming to Barcelona to open somewhere, but that kind of fell through because of COVID. And then the people that were taking over the cafe in London kind of pulled back a little bit. And then we sort of, I don't know how to explain it, but we saved the cafe basically because we closed it up. We put barrier at the front and we just did takeaway and just us working together again. Because in that cafe, we had like about five staff at the peak of it being quite busy. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's so interesting. You know, so many people changed their business models during COVID. It was, you know, such a hard time, but also a very creative time. Did that experience change the way that you planned to open in Barcelona?
Yeah, completely changed our plans. We we own a farm in Aragon, and it has a small little building on it. And we planning to come to Barcelona to open a cafe, we decided that we'd ride, once the people took over the cafe in London, we moved to the farm in Aragon, and we basically lived there for a year and a half, and we completed the work on it. It already had some structural work done to it, and we just completed the rest of the house. So we lived, and it was an off-grid building. Like, we had no running water, no light, no anything, gas, anything. It's on a farm, like of almonds and olives. And we lived there for a year and a half. And then we loved living there so much that we decided that we'd, some people were already doing a food truck in the area, just doing pizzas. And so then we thought, oh, maybe we can do a food truck. So we bought a food truck and we did burgers and fries. And we went to all the little regional towns. And we did that for like 6 months, I think it was. And then I'm a little bit old and I was like, I don't want to be flipping burgers for the rest of my life. And we have other plans as well to do other things. So then we thought, oh, we have the coffee machine. We'd bought a coffee machine over with us from London. And we thought, let's try and do the thing in Barcelona again. But let's rethink it. Like, let's try and make it a little bit more COVID proof. So let's get rid of the food and let's think about maybe, like, we're interested in design because we're both studied graphic design. And then we thought, oh, let's try and get things in that we like that are local. So it's kind of almost like a, what would you call it? Like, it's kind of like a souvenir shop, I suppose, but with a coffee machine inside. So, but the souvenirs are kind of like we've curated it.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of souvenir shops around Barcelona, and I would say this doesn't fit the traditional mold, yeah, where everything is very beautiful. So there's, yeah, like beautiful natural wine with gorgeous labels and amazing ceramics, beautiful tinned fish. It's, yeah, it's all very bespoke and carefully chosen and extremely beautiful to be here. But yeah, like, there's no seats. It's basically a takeaway shop model, which, I mean, do you feel like, I don't know, it's really hard to run food businesses anywhere in the world or hospitality businesses. Do you feel, Alex, maybe you pick this up, do you feel like this model is sustainable in a business sense, but also, you know, from two guys who are running small business?
Yeah, the thing is in Barcelona, they changed the the mayor, and Barcelona have a situation, they don't allow more restaurants, bar, cafe in the center. And then it's kind of like impossible to open at a cafe. You need to buy a license, they're quite expensive. And this is why we came with the idea that if we open a shop, because you can open a shop, and even we have a coffee, but it's to take away, it's kind of like a shop because people are getting a product and taking home. And like this, we can have this business here in the center of Barcelona. I think it's a quite, the situation, I think it's a bit bad for young people if they want to open something in Barcelona, because if you don't have the money for pay a license, they already existing restaurant, you don't have a chance to open. But I think if you have, you are creative and things, you can find ideas or things how you can open other kind of business.
Okay. And it, you know, you're not doing food. Is it a relief to not be doing the whole brunch thing, getting everyone's eggs exactly how they want them?
Well, actually, when we was living in London, we got a little bit burned with people. I think it's getting more demanding with the way they want the food come out of the kitchen. And not having this table or not having to have food, and I think it's quite nice. People just come here, have a chat, and then, you know, it's, and people here is quite happy. You know, they, you normally don't argue with no one. They just come and, you know, they're on holiday or they're in the sunny Barcelona, and then, you know, it's all more easy.
And what about the coffee sourcing? Like, how do you approach that? Where do you get the beans from? Who roasts them?
Our beans we get from the guys between Barcelona and Madrid, this other city called Zaragoza, and the guys roasting there the coffee for us. When we was living in the finca, we discovered this, these guys, close where we was living, somebody was using the coffee. And we decided to have them because in Barcelona, many people use the same roaster. And for us, was like quite nice to have a different one. Like, you know, if you're into coffee, you can go and try different beans, not the same and everywhere.
Okay. And Cameron, I got to go back to some of the places you worked at in Melbourne because they're so iconic.
Yeah.
Perhaps, you know, the less said about my experiences at Chase's, the better.
Yeah.
But Blue Train was such a game changer for, yeah, I'd say, Australian cafe culture. Paul,
yeah,
Mathis,
yeah,
who
Paul Mathis, yeah,
opened that up. And I mean, such a creative thinker in terms of what's possible in hospitality.
Yeah.
Tell people a little bit about that business and what it was like to be part of something that was, so influential.
That business was amazing. Like, it was really, it was massive, like huge, really, really busy, like crazy busy, but really, really well done, well run. Paul, Angela and George were like really great, like, at doing that. I worked at the end of them having the business, and then it went over to the Dimatinas. So I worked with both. Both were great to work for. And like, basically for doing this, it really set me up to work in hospitality, even though that's not what was my chosen profession. It's something I basically just fell into. And a lot of the people that worked at Blue Train have gone on to do other things. So, you know, and a lot of the people that worked there, we're all still in contact. So whether it's, you know, like in contact closely or just on social media or whatever, but I kind of know what everyone's doing who I worked with. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think I saw something on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook that much, but I happened to drift by, and I think Paul's about to open another cafe.
I don't know, but yeah, perhaps. It's, yeah, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, it's always interesting to watch what he does. I mean, for people who haven't followed what Paul's done, like Chocolate Buddha was also another one of his openings at Federation Square. Yes, a really innovative restaurant in the middle of the city. And I don't know, he's just always doing interesting things. Like,
I think Chocolate Buddha was Angela.
Oh, was it? But Paul was involved.
He would have been involved. He had Transport, I think, as well.
Oh, Transport, then. True. Yeah.
I think that might have been Angela, not Paul.
Okay.
But Paul had like a restaurant in Melbourne Central.
That's right.
And it was like the 100 mile one, yeah, which was like really, really ahead of its time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The first time a lot of people had that concept of sourcing locally.
Yeah.
And
that was at the beginning.
I remember like things yeah, I don't know, like I think pinch pots for salt that you didn't have to touch it, like just different types of straws, just like a really creative thinker. So, yeah. I mean, what do you feel like you've taken, like personally and professionally, from being around people like that?
Well, I think that anyone who comes into both of our shops, when they come in, if they're from Australia, they're always like, oh, this is very Melbourne. I don't know. I think there's something about Melbourne. I don't know what it is, like having come from there. It just has a – sometimes – probably people are going to hate me for saying this, but when I left Melbourne, I felt like it was very over-designed. It kind of lost a little bit of edge. But I'm sure it's still there. Don't hate me for saying it. But I was living in Brunswick at the time, and it was the beginning of it, like becoming, going from being like a local kind of area with local shops to becoming like just cafes everywhere and like a little bit more gentrified, I suppose.
I think there'd be few people that would argue that the Melbourne cafe market has become very saturated.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, I mean, we're talking about it a lot on the podcast at the moment, that it's, there are so many pressures on hospitality businesses, and in a crowded market, of course, there, you know, it's even more challenging.
Yeah.
But like, say, what about, you know, is this a bit of a Cuban place as well? Like, is there anything that you're bringing from your heritage?
I don't think so. yeah, Cuba is a very complicated country. But when we was in London, yeah, we did like a kind of like a bit like a nine Cuban food and stuff like this. We did kind of like a, because we was coming here to Barcelona, and we got this idea of tapas, but instead to do like a Spanish tapa, we was doing kind of like a Cuban ones, and but for the rest, no, it's very little influence. I think the only Cuban thing is me here.
Well, that's a very good thing. Cameron, there's also a few baked treats in store. Do you want to tell us about those?
Yeah, I just do basic baked goods. We did them in London. So I do like an Anzac biscuit. I do a brownie with a cookie on top. And then I'll do a vegan gluten-free bar, which is just seeds and nuts and prunes. But I've never trained as a chef. But it's just something that I was always interested in, and I did a lot in London. And so here we just do a basic, like only do three things, and we try and keep it quite simple in here. I don't want to go too crazy and too elaborate with things. Yeah.
Do you have to explain the Anzac biscuit to a lot of people?
No, I don't. It's very difficult to say Anzac, like so, and explain what it means, because it's Australian New Zealand Army Corps, and then it's like so I just say it's oats and coconut. It's a cookie with oats and coconut.
Yeah, keep it simple.
Yeah.
And Alexei, the ceramics in here and the fish, like everything is so beautiful, so carefully chosen. Like, tell us a bit about the products that are here and how you find them and bring them in.
All the tin fish is like, I think for many years, Portugal was like the place where people buy like sardines, because all the things look really nice. And the Spanish ones was a little bit more traditional. They didn't put more effort in the labels, but this thing is changing now, and then I think it's more young people involved in the design of the label. And then this is what we have is quite like a, they are not new brands, they are for a long time, but they've been rebranding the packaging and stuff like this. And the ceramic is, we get a little bit, it's a mix of things. We have a bit more traditional from here, from Spain, and then a little bit more kind of like a, I will say, cool but different from Portugal. Ceramic is a little bit difficult here. They produce a lot in Spain, but many people, they just keep doing the traditional things. They don't like to go out of what they do all their life. And then sometimes this is a little bit difficult. They are not very good organized with sending or showing you what they have. But I think this make you a little bit search a little bit hard and then find like a nicer product, and you know.
Yeah, well, it's so beautifully curated. I want one of everything, or maybe four of everything. what about for other people who are coming to Barcelona? They've got their coffee here. What are some other favorite places that you guys love sending people to?
Bueno, here next to Chiloteca, we send people to around the corner. It's like a kind of like a tapas bar, but a little bit they do traditional and a little bit sophisticated. It's called Bar del Pla. They use like a natural wine. Some of the natural wine they have there, we sell it here in the shop as well. Then we sell people around the corner. We have a place that do cheesecake. And instead to do the traditional cheesecake, they do with different cheeses. Normally try to go on the weekday, and the weekend is a massive queue. we have a few bakeries. They are quite nice, like Brunel and Hoffman. I don't know, it's a little bit of everything. It's in El Bon here, it's all the smallest street. You can find every place quite easy and close.
And what about you, Cameron? Where would you send people?
I'm quite interested in architecture, so then I'll, like, everyone goes to Gaudi, but then I try and, or the Gaudi buildings, but I'll try and send them to other buildings. So, for instance, if they're going up to Sagrada Familia, there's a hospital up there called St. Pau. I think it has another name. I think it's Modernista something, but it's St. Pau Hospital is the one that I send them to. And it's beautiful. It's like a little, like, village almost inside. It's like really well designed, really well thought out as a, like, it's like a, I don't know, yeah, like a pavilion, I suppose. Like, but it's really, really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, I'm going to Sagrada Familia on Monday, so I'm definitely going to look out for the beautifully designed hospital. But I have to say thank you for sending us to Bar del Pla, because we had a beautiful meal there the other evening. And you just feel like you're really in the thick of it. Never ceases to amaze me here. Just the simplest things are so delicious. Just some anchovies, some olive oil, olives, and, you know, a little pepper on a plate. And it's so simple, but so perfect and absolutely transporting. So, yeah, thanks for the great coffees. Thanks for the recommendations. I'll let you get on with it, because I know you got to open soon and Barcelona needs its coffee. Thanks so much for sharing with us today, Alexei and Cameron. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @dirtylinenpodcast. We can't wait to hear from you.
This.